This is Audible.
Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Kidnapped by the Pirate by Kira Andrews. Narrated by Cornell Collins. Chapter 1. 1710. If pirates were to be the bloody, savage end of Nathaniel Bainbridge, he wished they'd get on with it. The windswept deck was damp beneath his bare feet, prompting thoughts of the dewy grass of home. What he wouldn't give for the freedom to run across the fields of Hollington Estate, wind rushing in his ears over the steady thump of his heart, the world falling away in his wake. Instead, he was confined by an endless, restless sea taunting him with its wildness. In England, he'd heard countless tales of villainous pirates and their dastardly deeds. People spoke as if the ocean teemed with the brigands. But the voyage had been mile after mile of nothing. Nathaniel shook his head at his foolishness. Not that he actually wanted pirates to attack their ship and massacre them. If only he could move, he would keep boredom at bay. He gripped the railing, longing for dirt beneath his nails, scratches on his palms from tree bark as he climbed and explored, wonderfully aching muscles from hours in the lake. If he could only run a simple mile, hardly any distance at all. But trapped on the ship, that much clear land would be a marvel. He wiped sea spray from his eyes. If only the ability to run and jump and swim was worth anything at all in his world, instead of being childish folly he was supposed to have outgrown. Men did not climb trees or swim for hours, and certainly they didn't run for the sheer pleasure of it the way he had at Hollington. Of course, the estate wasn't theirs anymore, sold off to pay debts. So even if he made his way back to Kent one day, he would never return to those rolling hills. Its verdant trees and round, tranquil lake would now be home to another family. No. For the foreseeable future, home would be Primrose Isle, a new colony his father desperately wanted to see flourish. Walter Bainbridge had found his fortunes in England not the least bit fortunate, and as a governor in the new world had the thing he loved most dearly, power. Nathaniel's future bride waited there. Elizabeth Davenport stood to inherit quite a fortune, and for the colony and Walter to thrive, alliances had to be made. So Nathaniel would do the only useful thing he could, and marry. He brushed a fresh spray of briny seawater from his face as he stared out at the endless night, keeping a firm hold on the rail. His untucked shirt flapped in the breeze. The lower fastenings on his breeches unbuckled under his knees. In the dark, there was no one to comment on his state of undress, and he supposed the crew didn't care a whit anyway. His trimmed hair curled at the ends in the dampness, and he tucked a lock behind his ear. It had been his little act of rebellion to cut it much shorter than most gentlemen. He certainly wouldn't be wearing dreaded wigs either if he could help it. Clouds conspired to hide the stars and raise a thin crescent of moon. He shivered in the late September night's chill. He really should have worn his hated shoes and jacket. At least the wind was no longer the bitter cold of the mid-Atlantic as they neared the West Indies. He shifted back and forth on his feet, lifting them like a racehorse stamping at the starting line. The Proud William was fairly large, a merchant ship carrying a cargo of salt fish and forged metal tools to the colonies. But when he'd attempted even a light trot around the main deck, the crew had reacted with consternation at best, hostility at worst. Running was his very favourite activity and the thing he excelled at most in life, much to his father's disgust. Swimming in the lake in summertime, cutting through the placid water with sure, even strokes, was a joy as well. To be surrounded now by endless water but unable to dive in and soothe his cramped muscles was the worst torture. He'd asked the captain if he could at least climb the mast or sail rigging and had been flatly refused. so he stood by the starboard rail and sometimes paced, careful to stay out of the crew's way. At least he had been told their progress was swift, and that after a month's voyage, 31 days and some 13 hours since they left England, to be exact, they would reach the island in a fortnight if the wind held. He was informed that some ships took several months to reach the colonies. Ships could leave London the same day and arrive weeks or more apart. Such was the way of the sea. Staring out at the nothingness, he stopped his restless shifting and squinted. The weak sliver of moon had valiantly escaped the clouds for a moment, and Nathaniel thought he spotted a strange kind of movement. The night took on shape before becoming uniform once more. Perhaps it had been a great ocean creature surfacing, a whale or giant squid, or some kind of mysterious monster. He chuckled. Earlier that evening, Susanna had read aloud fables from one of the old leather-bound tomes they'd brought from home, and his imagination was clearly running wild. She'd always been the far more indulgent of his two older sisters, and he knew she'd packed books he'd favour, although she certainly had a taste for adventurous tales rather than the sentimental stories ladies were supposed to read. They'd both enjoyed the diary of a naval captain who'd served on several ships of the line and described life aboard in vivid detail. Although the cabin Nathaniel and Susanna shared was tiny, at least they had privacy. He really should rejoin her in their cabin to sleep and end another interminable day. But the walls closed in on him, and it felt like a prison. Susanna's thunderous snores didn't help matters, but he couldn't begrudge her anything. For the 100th time, he wondered what his life on Primrose Isle would be like. The colony was only a few years old, and there had been whispers of struggles with agriculture and trade, rumours of corruption and settlers packing up already. He'd be forced to work for his father or at some other respectable job procured for him, like Susanna's husband, Bart. Handsome Bart was 30 and penniless, but of good breeding and an agreeable disposition. He and Susanna had insisted on each other, waiting several years until both their fathers gave in and agreed to the match. Bart seemed happy enough to do father's bidding, including leaving early for Primrose Isle some months ago, not knowing at the time Susanna was with child. When Walter Bainbridge made a demand, it was met. Sometimes Nathaniel marvelled that a man he had rarely seen since childhood could loom so large. Susanna and Bart had hated to be parted, but she was needed to oversee the packing up of the estate and auction of the more valuable items. Certainly it couldn't have been left to Nathaniel, who wouldn't have known where to begin given he'd spent as much time outside, away from the ornate house, as he could. Nathaniel had considered refusing when he and Susanna were summoned. But what would he do? Where would he live? His marriage to Elizabeth had been agreed upon by their fathers. And should he fail in his duty, Walter would disown him. He'd have nothing, not even a roof over his head. Bile rose in his throat. No, that would not do. So onward to Primrose Isle he went, to marry as his father saw fit. All he knew of Elizabeth Davenport was that she'd lived with her wealthy family for some years in Jamaica before her father joined forces with Walter to establish a shipping company on Primrose. Well, he also knew her writing was unfailingly neat, and from Susanna's recounting of the letter, that Elizabeth enjoyed needlework and greatly looked forward to sharing her life with him. He'd received her letter just before leaving England and had burned it in the grate in his room. At least the voyage was a worthy excuse for not responding. And as much as he'd wished to stay in England, he couldn't allow dear Susanna to sail the perilous Atlantic alone. Although, with how smooth their journey had been, completely lacking in beasts of the deep or even a gale of note, he apparently hadn't needed to fret. Still, it was done. He'd accepted years ago that he was feeble-minded, and although he knew he should be grateful for the opportunity to hold a position of at least some stature on the new colony, he dreaded the notion of truly being under his father's thumb once more. It had been blissful having his father overseas for years. He supposed he should feel remorseful for such churlish thoughts. But there was so much else to consume his stores of guilt. So much else indeed. He turned away from the rail, resigning himself to another long night in the swaying hammock. Susanna was, of course, sleeping in the cot in the only cabin their father could afford now that he'd squandered so much money. The cry from above pierced the night, and Nathaniel jumped a mile.
"Sails!"
In the flurry of activity and shouts, he pressed himself to the ship's side as the crew emerged from the hull like ants. Nathaniel squinted into the darkness, turning to and fro and seeing nothing. Then he spotted it. The hulk of a ship emerging from the night, not a single light flickering upon it, drawn to the proud William like a moth to flame. With a sickening twist of his stomach, he realized he had indeed spotted a monster. And it was upon them. He raced down to the cabin, bursting inside. Chestnut curls unpinned and tumbling over her shoulders, Susanna bolted up on the cot, her book thudding to the floor. One hand pressed to her round belly, she cried out, "What is it?" "I think it's pirates." He could hardly believe the words as he uttered them. Had he wished them into existence by grumbling over boredom? Oh, what a fool he was! The blood drained from Susanna's sweet, round face. "Pirates? I don't know what else it could be." He threw open a trunk and dug for his sheathed dagger, cursing himself for not raising the alarm sooner. His mind raced, thoughts jumbled as he grasped the hilt of the weapon and tossed the leather scabbard aside. The thunder of the crew's footsteps shook the ceiling, dust motes shaking loose and shouts filling the air. Susanna looked down at her nightgown, despairing.
"There's no time for petticoats or any of that nonsense."
She threw her flowing green gown over her head, her voice muffled by it.
"My God, it really is pirates, isn't it? Oh, I think I'm stuck."
Nathaniel helped tug the material down over her swollen belly. She emerged from the folds of soft fabric and peered up at the ceiling, as if she could see through the hull. Footsteps scuffled, and thumps reverberated. Tense voices shouting commands, too distant to make out clearly. Susanna whispered,
"No gunshots. Must be too many. The crew isn't fighting them. Help me pin this shut."
She had stopped wearing her corset, adopting what was apparently a new French style while she was with child. After he'd pinned the material enough that the robe-like gown would stay put, drawing a prick of blood from his fingertip in his haste, Nathaniel yanked on his stockings and refastened his breeches below his knees before jamming his feet into his buckled shoes. He wouldn't face these brigands in a state of undress. He tucked the dagger into the back of his trousers and whipped on his sleeveless waistcoat, fingers clumsy on the buttons. But there was no time for his cravat or jacket. Raised voices already echoed down the corridor. He spun about, belatedly hoping to find something to bar the door. Susanna had apparently had the same thought.
"The trunks aren't heavy enough. Besides, it will only anger them. It's no use."
"Get behind me," he urged her to the back of the cabin, which was barely wider than the breadth of one's outstretched arms.
"Be sure to mind your tongue," she said. "You know how thoughts can sometimes go right from your head and out your mouth without pausing for assessment."
He huffed.
"What exactly do you think I'm going to say to pirates?"
"Shh!" She slapped his shoulder. They waited, listening. More pounding footsteps, and shouts that possessed an undeniably feral quality. The hair on Nathaniel's body stood on end, his mouth going dry. Perhaps the pirates would pass them by. Perhaps they'd plunder the cargo and be done with it. Perhaps... The door burst open, almost flying off its hinges, and Nathaniel barely held in his yelp. His heart drummed so loudly he was certain the two invaders could hear. One of them brushed matted hair from his eyes. They both wore ripped and stained trousers as baggy as their shirts, and their boots were worn out. The long-haired man's beady gaze raked them up and down, and he asked his squat companion,
"You ever fuck a bitch with pup?"
Nathaniel's stomach swooped.
How do they know? Susanna was hidden behind him.
He lifted his chin, forcing strength to his words.
"You shan't lay so much as one filthy finger on my sister."
Ignoring him, the squat man leered, baring snaggled yellow teeth. He answered his friend's question.
"Good and juicy, I tell you."
Behind him, Susanna dug her fingers into Nathaniel's shoulder. Heart in his throat, he yanked the dagger from the waist of his breeches, brandishing it toward the pirates. "Stay back!" The two blinked at Nathaniel, then each other, before bursting into raucous laughter. The long-haired man said,
"Oh, no, we're done for, Deeks."
Heavy footfalls sounded in the corridor, brazen and commanding. Spine snapping straight, the pirates stepped aside as a man filled the doorway, shoulders almost brushing the frame. He was tall enough to duck slightly as he entered, and his sharp gaze swept the cabin, which had never seemed quite so small. He wore black from head to gold-tipped toes, open-collared shirt, trousers tucked into knee-high boots, and a long leather coat that flared out behind him. A pistol was tucked into his wide belt, and a cutlass winked from his hip. Gold gleamed on the belt buckle, matching the small square earring in his left ear, rings on his fingers, and the tips of those black boots. The ends of a red sash dangled over his hip, the only splash of colour aside from the gold. He had to be twice Nathaniel's age, his face weather-worn, a scar jagging across his left temple. His dark hair was cut fairly close to his head, a surprise since Nathaniel had expected all pirates to have long, unruly hair like the animals they were. His trimmed beard shadowed his strong jaw. In the low light, the colour of his narrowed eyes was impossible to ascertain, but Nathaniel imagined they must be as black as the pirate's soul. He might have been the very devil himself. Nathaniel's palm sweated around the handle of the dagger, and he hated the tremors in his outstretched arm. His throat was painfully dry, and he croaked,
We don't have anything of value. No gold or jewels worth your effort.
Susanna added,
Even my wedding ring is plated.
Tully, one of the proud William's young crew, had entered the cabin. The man, the pirate captain undoubtedly, glanced to him. Tully nodded.
"'Tis true. Only clothing and trinkets in their trunks."
He sniffed dismissively, tossing his reddish hair.
"'Nothing hidden anywhere in here we could find since we left London.'
Nathaniel had thought better of the crew, but saw now how naive he had been. It must have been Tully who had informed the pirates that Susanna was with child. "'What a coward you are, Tully!' he snorted.
"'As soon as I got a good look at a flag, I knew we were done for. If we won those, the Sea Hawk will gut you from stem to stern once you're in his talons. I ain't dying for cargo I don't give a fuck about, and a captain who treats us like garbage.'
"'Your destination is Primrose Isle?'
the pirate, this Sea Hawk, demanded, his tone low and calm. "'Yes,' Nathaniel answered. "'It's a new colony.' Tully nodded.
"'Our husband's there. We're to drop them off with their father. The old man's a governor or some such thing.'
At this, the Sea Hawk seemed to jolt. But a moment later the ripple had vanished and he was still again, fearsome and dispassionate. Nathaniel thought he must have imagined the hiccup. Yet a gleam entered the captain's devilish eyes, and dread slithered through Nathaniel. The Sea Hawk loomed nearer and demanded, in the same deliberate but undeniable manner,
"Your name, boy?"
Heart hammering, all he could manage was,
"This one's called Bainbridge,"
Tully offered.
"Bainbridge,"
the captain repeated, barely a whisper now.
"As in Walter Bainbridge?"
Fingers going numb around the dagger, Nathaniel nodded. He'd have bruises where Susanna clung to him, her sharp exhalations ghosting over the nape of his neck. There was no sense denying it. "Our father."
You're the son Walter Bainbridge killed his wife to achieve.
The captain's focus sent chills down Nathaniel's spine. He couldn't hide his wince and had to nod. His mother had never even held him before the rest of her lifeblood drained away. Susanna had been but 6, spying through the keyhole, and she'd confessed it all after Nathaniel's endless badgering when he was a lad. Strange how he could experience the aching, hollow absence of a touch he'd never had, even after 18 years. The captain's eyes glinted. Good God, the man was enormous. Nathaniel was tall enough, 5 feet and 7 inches or so, but this monster towered well over 6 feet. It was all Nathaniel could do to hold his ground and not stagger back against Susanna. The tip of his blade quivered mere inches from the villain's black heart. The Seahawk gazed down at them as though they were prey he was most eager to consume.
Your father is a liar, corrupt, an evildoer in silk stockings and a curled wig.
Nathaniel swallowed hard, hand shaking. Could he lunge and push the dagger into this vile man's heart? Not that he had much love for his father, but who was a pirate to talk of evildoers? The Seahawk's eyes glowed with hatred.
Your father cheated me. He was tasked with justice, with fairness. Instead, he conspired to steal from me. He branded me a pirate when I was a privateer.
Aren't they the same thing? Nathaniel blurted.
As the Seahawk's nostrils flared, Susanna dug her nails into Nathaniel's shoulder.
No, they fucking are not,
the pirate gritted out.
Privateers are licensed, legal. Privateers follow rules, laws. Just as your father was supposed to as a judge in the Court of Admiralty in Jamaica. Your father tried to strip me and my men of everything we'd worked and suffered for. We escaped him, but in the years that have followed, he has never paid the price.
Dread consumed Nathaniel. His father's greed and avarice would once again bring suffering. If not for Walter's mounting debts, Nathaniel and Susanna would still be safe at home, waiting until she had her babe before making the journey. Hollington wouldn't have had to be sold at all. And now they faced God knew what at the mercy of pirates.
O Lord, please spare Susanna and her child. Bile rose in his throat at the thought of any harm coming to his sister,
terror clammy on his skin. Sweat slipped down Nathaniel's spine.
He racked his brain for something, anything to say. Some means of escape.
His dagger shook, and he licked his dry lips.
I'm sorry. He had to fix this.
A slow, ghastly smile curled the devil's lips.
You will be.
Chapter 2 Hawk ignored the boy's trembling dagger, nodding to his men.
Relay these orders to Mr. Snell. Confiscate any cargo worth taking. Leave the ship and crew unarmed and with enough food and water to survive. The lady shall continue to Primrose Isle, unmolested.
As the men scurried out, followed by the red-headed sailor who had happily given up all the proud William's secrets, he gazed down at Walter Bainbridge's precious son.
Your journey will be delayed.
Delayed?
Bainbridge asked.
He was smooth-faced and slim,
long-legged with ordinary brown eyes. His short, light brown hair curled, damp with sweat. He'd missed a button on his dark waistcoat, and it hung askew above his white shirt and tan breeches. His black, square-toed shoes were surprisingly scuffed. White stockings bunched at one ankle. Red splotches flushed his pale cheeks. He had surely been untroubled by hard work a day in his life. utterly unremarkable aside from his parentage.
"You're coming with us,"
the woman cried out. Hawk almost laughed as Bainbridge screwed up his courage and lunged. With a simple twist and squeeze, Hawk liberated him of the dagger, which was constructed of fine steel and a simple wooden handle.
"Don't hurt yourself, boy. Your father won't pay for a carcass."
He spied the dagger's sheath on the floor and held out an imperious hand for it. Bainbridge bent and reluctantly handed it to him. Hawk tucked the weapon into his belt.
"Pay?" Bainbridge's daughter sputtered. "But he hardly has any money."
Hawk assessed her. Modestly expensive gown, yet paste jewels. He took a step forward, and they jerked back as one. He asked,
"And how did that come to pass?"
He likely knew most of the story, but perhaps Bainbridge's children could impart new information. She inched around to stand by her brother's side, clutching his hand.
"The family fortune went to his elder brother. He'd squandered everything else on his dream for Primrose Isle. He managed to win the governorship, but if not for the Crown's money to establish the new colony, he barely has a thing."
"Bloody son of a bitch couldn't even spend my prize wisely after he stole it."
The Spanish galleon had been laden with spices, gold, and tons of uncoined silver. Hawk still cringed when he remembered how proud he'd been to appear at the Court of Admiralty with his hard-won plunder those years ago. Ready to give England her share in accordance with regulations. Doing his part in the war with Spain. What a fool he'd been. He pretended to mull it over.
"In that case, I'll offer him the fairness he denied me."
The siblings exhaled, shoulders slumping in relief. The girl said,
"Thank you, sir. Whatever it was our father did, I swear—"
"I'll give him a month to gather the funds before our arrival. 100,000 pounds.
As one, their jaws dropped. The boy sputtered,
"It's too much."
Possibly. But an arrogant man who valued his heir would find a way. Bainbridge's pride would demand it. Besides, Hawk hadn't waited years for revenge to go easy on the swine now. Ignoring their dismay, he announced,
"Around the night of the next dark moon we will arrive at Primrose Isle and announce ourselves. Your father will personally row out a skiff into the harbour, alone. He will meet my ship. I will exchange his son for the ransom. Simple."
Bainbridge's children locked gazes, hopelessness passing between them, tears slipping down the girl's cheeks. Hawk understood their dread, their terror. Remembering his own after being unfairly sentenced by their father, he revelled in their misery. She cried,
"Sir, have pity. My poor brother has committed no sin."
"Pity? Your father created me, the Seahawk. And I have become the monster he bore, and so very much more," Hawk added. "And your brother would only be the first to suffer if Bainbridge doesn't comply. Tell your father that his precious Primrose Isle will bleed and burn unless he meets my demands."
She opened her mouth to speak again, but Hawk tired of her calls for mercy and cut her off with,
"No treachery, and your brother lives. But if Bainbridge plots against me—"
He kept his voice low. A calm utterance was sometimes more menacing than a shout. He peered intently at the son, who had wrapped an arm around his sister's shaking shoulders.
"If your father defies me, this boy dies. Painfully. Slowly. I will gut him like a fish. Slice him into pieces, and deliver them to your father one by one."
He had been so very patient in his revenge, and this was his moment. He grasped hold of it with both hands, giving no quarter. She gasped, slapping a hand over her mouth. Bainbridge the younger's chest rose and fell rapidly, but he kept his chin up. His sister's eyes overflowed with more tears.
"Please, I beg you, Let my brother come with me. He's to be married. We're starting a new life. He's never harmed another creature. He's kind and good.
Hawk sighed to himself. Enough of this. He curled his tongue into his cheek and gave her a leering appraisal.
If you prefer to take your brother's place.
No, the boy shouted. Bainbridge's eyes burned with a fierceness he had lacked before now. I'll do whatever you ask. Just don't harm my sister.
Hawk's lips curled up. If he were a tender-hearted type, he'd almost be touched. As it was, well. Breathing hard, Bainbridge yanked his sister into a hug.
I'll be all right. I love you, Susie. She clung to him. Don't go. Don't let him take you.
Wishing he could roll his eyes, Hawk hauled Bainbridge from the cabin, dragging him out by the scruff of his neck. He didn't fight, apparently surrendering to his fate for his sister's sake, or perhaps having used up his shred of bravery. The girl would have been no use. If Hawk recalled correctly, Walter Bainbridge had two daughters. But rumour was, it had been a son to carry on his name that he'd obsessed over and valued above the health of his own wife. And now here was that very son, in Hawk's grasp. Why the fates had blessed this night so roundly he'd never know, but he wouldn't question it. Not every wind blew such good luck into his sails. Here was his opportunity for revenge at last. Would the snake be able to raise the money? Perhaps. Most likely, given his connections. But at the very least, Hawk held Bainbridge's precious legacy in his grip. Oh, what he would give to see the old man's face when he heard the news. Hawk laughed out loud, his delight echoing off the water all around. He shoved the boy towards Snell at the rail.
"Behold our prize, Mr. Quartermaster! Walter Bainbridge's precious son!"
Snell was a hair taller than Bainbridge and quite a bit thicker, solid muscle beneath the extra layers that had come with age as he passed 50 years. His silver-wreathed fingers gripped Bainbridge's arm ruthlessly. Dark eyes meeting Hawk's beneath his thinning mess of fair hair, Snell laughed, wide-mouthed, earrings glinting in the torchlight. Snell's black shirt gaped at the neck, revealing an anchor tattoo just below his throat. He had 5 or 6 tattoos hammered into his flesh. Hawk was content with one. After confirming his orders with Snell, Hawk passed on the ransom demand to the merchant captain, a salty old seaman who merely shrugged and nodded, the boy's life clearly of no concern. Bainbridge watched the exchange with obvious dismay. For his part, Snell eyed young Bainbridge with nothing more than a raised brow on his craggy face.
"Come on, then. Over you go."
The boy blinked at the long wooden plank connecting the merchant ship to the damned manta. He glanced over his shoulder toward the stairs below decks where his sister's sobs echoed. His body flexed, as though to run or take flight.
"No, no, none of that," Hawk said, smirking. "Where would you even escape to?"
A darkness in him fed on the Bainbridge boy's terror.
"Unless you plan to be shark food, there's only one place for you to go now."
He turned his gaze to the shadowy hulk of his ship, its sleek sails temporarily furled, the crew following his orders to the letter. It had been his home for years. Yet he grew restless. This was it.
This was bloody well it. Revenge would finally be his.
Up until tonight, Hook's luck had been running out. He'd felt it. Either he'd meet his fate at the bottom of the sea, run through on a blade, or at the end of a hangman's noose. Now, here the Bainbridge boys stood, like a living, breathing chance at regaining at least some of what he'd lost. Perhaps even a chance at a new life. It was foolishness, but maybe.
"Up you get."
Snell pushed the prisoner to the plank.
Captain Hawk ain't a patient man, I warn you. Nor am I.
Breathing hard, Bainbridge climbed up, legs visibly trembling. He looked over at the manta, then back at Hawk, then down at the waves.
"Don't even think about some noble sacrifice,"
Hawk snarled, vaulting up behind him.
"Or we'll take your sister after all. She won't be so pretty when we're done with her."
He grabbed the boy by the nape again.
"Move!"
After his boots hit the familiar deck, he marched the prisoner to the stern and stood surveying the crew, still holding Bainbridge fast. When the plank was raised and hooks released from the proud William, Hawk shouted orders to set sail. In the grey hint of dawn, they caught the wind. Even weighted with the pilfered cargo, the damned manta was the faster ship. Hawk remained astern regardless, watching to be sure the merchant vessel didn't make any attempt at following. Stranger things had happened. Bainbridge shivered beside him, fists clenched and lips pressed tight, watching the proud William grow smaller in their wake. Some pirates favoured warships, but Hawk preferred the agility of a sloop, its 46 men a lean crew compared to some ships. Fewer men to share prizes with. Fewer men to cause trouble. Hawk's mind whirled. For most of his years, he dreamed of a life on the waves, but he'd never wanted piracy. Walter Bainbridge had given him no choice. There was no possibility of restoring his tarnished honour. But with his share of the ransom, perhaps he could escape the brutality. Maybe he could find, somewhere, a quiet stretch of island beyond England's reach, a place to fish and raise a few animals, enough to live comfortably, to know peace on his own terms. He'd be alone. But he was long accustomed to that. A distant pang twinged, dull after all this time. Years ago, he'd imagined finding a mate, a man to share his life with, even to love. Such absurdity. Unbidden, a memory of blonde hair and impish blue eyes flared before returning to the dark morass of the past. He'd had love for a brief moment before it was ripped away. Ah, the folly of youth. Yet here I am, dreaming of a peaceful life. Folly indeed. Hawk centred his mind on the task at hand, peering into the distance. They were well away, so he hauled the boy below decks to his cabin, ignoring his yelp. There was just enough murky light through the stern windows to see without bothering with the tinderbox. His desk sat at the rear, bed built into the wall opposite it on the other side of the cabin's open space. In that space, Hawk crossed his arms and eyed his captive up and down.
"Boy!"
"I'm 18 years." Bainbridge puffed up his narrow chest. "I'm a man." Hawk had to laugh, a sharp exhalation.
"Are you now?"
At 41, Hawk could barely remember being so damned young.
"Listen, boy, here's how it will be.
My name is..."
"Unimportant," Hawk barked.
He'd surely heard the name when he'd looked into Bainbridge's history, but it didn't matter now. In fact, it was easier this way.
"You are merely cargo, my treasure, my prize, my plum. That is all you are until your father pays what I'm owed. I would put you in the hold, but the men would be tempted to have at you, and your father wouldn't want what was left. Do you understand? Plum."
It was all the name the prisoner needed aside from his accursed surname. Not waiting for an answer, Hawk opened a trunk by the starboard hull and dug out a scratchy wool blanket he rarely used, tossing it. It hit Bainbridge in the chest and pulled at his feet. Hawk nodded to the corner by the windows.
"Sleep there."
Bainbridge snatched the blanket from the floor and straightened unsteadily.
"For the next month, while your father gathers funds, you will not be leaving this cabin. so food and water will be brought to you. You'll have use of a bucket that will be emptied regularly so your filth doesn't stink up my cabin. Don't speak to any of the crew. Don't speak to me, unless spoken to. Nod if you understand.
Not leaving this cabin?
Plum blurted, horror written plain on his boy's face.
Clearly you do not understand.
Hawk took a stride forward, gratified when the boy jerked back.
It's just, please, I won't be any trouble.
His breath came quickly, chest heaving.
Can't I go up to the deck at times, to stretch my legs?
Be grateful I'm not chaining you to the bed.
Hawk raked his gaze down and back up his prisoner, instilling fear with a leering snarl.
Naked.
Plum's light brown eyes widened, darting to the mattress. Hawk turned on his heel and fetched the key from his desk. Now that they'd settled that,
I could work up on deck, help the crew with whatever it is they do.
Disbelieving, Hawk straightened to his full height and whirled, making sure, yes, his coat flared behind him. He hadn't garnered the Seahawk's fearsome reputation in only 4 years without some dramatics. Yet incredibly, Bainbridge kept talking.
"I'd be happy to work," his eyes implored, fingers twisting in the blanket. "I'd do anything you say."
Clearly fucking not, as the command to shut his damn mouth had already been tossed aside. Hawk sneered.
"Work, you? Tell me, have you worked a single day in your delicate little life?"
Cheeks red. The boy stared at his scuffed shoes in answer.
"You will stay in this cabin, and you will only speak when spoken to." "But I'm not wholly cruel."
He waved his arm magnanimously at the bookshelf.
"Read all you like."
Bainbridge looked at the volumes with a strange sort of despair bordering on disdain, his shoulders slumping even lower. Fury sparked and iron dug into his palm as Hawk gripped the key.
"Is my library not of your liking, my lord?"
"No, no, I'm sure it's excellent,"
Plum answered meekly, backing up a step.
"Most men on this ship can't even sign their names. It took me years to learn. Years of bettering myself word by word. You're a privileged little piece of shit, and you will sit down, shut up, and pray your snake of a father pays the money he owes, or you'll be the one who pays. You and your sister. Her babe."
In truth, Hawk would never harm an innocent woman or child, or permit his crew to do so. But Bainbridge didn't have to know that.
"Am I understood, Plum?"
Head down, he whispered.
"Yes."
Hawk crossed to the door in 2 long strides. He slammed it behind him, put the key in the lock, and... nothing. Iron grated as the stubborn lock refused to turn. Hawk jiggled it for a few moments. Of all the times for the lock to seize up, it had to be when he was terrifying a prisoner.
For fuck's sake.
Jaw clenched, he threw open the door again. Plum still stood where he'd left him, clutching the blanket. Tugging his arm roughly, Hawk dragged him out of the cabin, hollering,
"Mr. Cooper, fix the lock. You have 10 minutes.
He smiled humorlessly at Bainbridge.
"It seems you have a momentary reprieve. It will be the last."
Chapter 3. None too gently, Captain Hawk tugged him along to the ladder to the main deck. Nathaniel glimpsed the crew's quarters at the bow of the ship. A cramped space, dark and stinking of sweat and mildew and heaven knew what else. A cook was toiling over a stove, men stowing their hammocks as the sun rose and pulling out long tables for eating. Then Nathaniel was roughly pushed up the ladder. On deck he inhaled the cool, fresh air gratefully, the sun blinding where it peaked just over the horizon. He soaked in all the sights and smells around him. The threat of a month alone in the pirate captain's cabin filling him with dread that threatened to undo him. The confinement of a ship was awful enough. To be trapped in that one room? His stomach curdled. He gazed about, heart lurching as he spotted sails in the distance. Was it the proud William? Must have been, since no one paid it any mind. Nathaniel watched glumly as it shrank to a speck. But Susanna was safe, and that was what mattered. He hated that she would be alone for the rest of her journey, especially in her delicate state. Guilt pricked, even though he knew there was not a thing he could do. He glared at the captain, who at least had released Nathaniel from his vile grasp. The rising sun showed the pirate's eyes to be a surprisingly vibrant blue tinged with grey. The little square gold earring gleamed. The quartermaster, a Mr. Snell, according to the captain's gruff greeting, approached.
"Captain, the men want to eat some of the saltfish we took. Shall it be given to cook?"
"Aye." Nathaniel's stomach grumbled at the thought of food, but he'd starved before asking Captain Hawk. No, simply Hawk, because he didn't deserve any title of prestige or honour. As Hawk and Mr. Snell walked some feet away, conferring in tones so low he couldn't overhear, Nathaniel examined his prison. The Damned Manta was a single-masted sloop that had likely once been a merchant vessel. Thick coils of rope crowded the ship. If there had originally been an aft deck near the stern, Nathaniel suspected it had been removed to add more guns. He counted 14 around the top deck, which was about 60 feet from bow to stern and flat the whole way across. From a distance, the sloop would appear lower in the water. It would also make for good running, and Nathaniel's feet itched to race from bow to stern, around the ship's massive wheel and back again. He wasn't sure how many pirates toiled aboard, but guessed 45 or 50 men. They seemed to be a piecemeal lot, men of all colours, ages and sizes, some with long hair, some short, some with cleaner faces and others with ratty beards. Many wore loose pants, but some were form-fitting. Tattoos and piercings decorated bare skin. One man in a leather vest had dark ink so thick on his arms that Nathaniel at first thought he was wearing a shirt. High above, a lookout perched on the yard, holding on to the mast. The pirate black still fluttered against the sky. This flag emblazoned with a white bird of prey, wings spread wide, beak cruel. A seahawk, he presumed. As he watched, men yanked on the ropes to lower the flag, keeping it out of sight to lure in the ship's next victims. He lowered his gaze from the sails and rigging. Hawk and Snell now seemed to be talking about him, eyeing him in such a way that the hair on Nathaniel's arm stood on end. Unable to bear their scrutiny, he turned to look out at the waves, skin crawling. Wind rushed in his ears, and he wasn't sure whether or not to be grateful he couldn't make out their words. The truth was, he had a terrible suspicion Hawk was quite overestimating Nathaniel's worth to his father. It was accurate Walter had wanted a son with a fervour bordering on obsession, or so Nathaniel had always been told. Nathaniel's uncle, his father's elder brother, had not only inherited the family fortune, estate, and title of baronet, but had sired 3 strapping, intelligent sons. Walter had resented them all bitterly, and had been determined to achieve a son of his own, an emblem of his manhood. Margaret, Nathaniel's mother, had first provided Walter with the Hollington estate, then a daughter, Jane, who lived in Kent with her husband, a naval officer often at sea, and their 4 children. Next came Susanna, another disappointment for Walter. So again and again he got Margaret with child, despite the physician's warnings that the first 2 had almost killed her. Nathaniel wasn't sure how many babes had been lost before she'd managed to birth him. Walter had finally acquired his prize, and though he'd sincerely mourned his wife, by all accounts, Nathaniel suspected Walter's greater sorrow was Nathaniel's utter failure to be the son he'd desired so fervently. To say he had been a disappointment quite understated the matter. For a moment he allowed himself the childish yearning for the mother he'd never known. She'd given her life for his, and he was certain the trade had not been worthy. How he would have let her down, too. A half-wit and a sinner.
"Time's up,"
Hawk announced, tearing him from his wayward thoughts. Then those blue eyes narrowed.
"What do you look so guilty about?"
Nothing.
With one powerful stride, Hawk closed the distance between them, and the rail jammed into Nathaniel's back.
Hawk leaned in, towering over him. "Whatever heroic ideas you have in your head, get rid of them. If you attempt any kind of attack on me or my men, or you wish to fling yourself over the side in some misguided notion of noble sacrifice, we will hunt down that merchant ship and see your sister and her child suffer. Oh, how they will suffer. Do I make myself clear, or do you require specifics?"
Nathaniel shook his head, desperate to back away farther from Hawk's mocking sneer. He was caught painfully with no retreat at hand, the man's body an unmovable wall, his will impenetrable. Hawk was right. To go overboard would be suicide, and Nathaniel didn't have a prayer of overpowering a single man on the ship, let alone 50 of them. He was trapped.
"Any other questions?"
"Who did you steal this ship from?"
The words flitted through his mind and somehow rasped right out of his mouth. Nathaniel snapped his jaw shut, blood rushing in his ears. Hawk straightened up as if offended. He growled,
"This is my ship. I earned her fair and square in a wager. It was your father who tried to steal her from me."
"I don't understand. Why?"
He gritted out,
"Not that it fucking matters what you understand, but after years of toil, I finally had my own ship. I considered carrying merchant cargo, but I wanted to do more for my country, despite..."
Nathaniel waited a few moments, watching the way Hawk's jaw clenched.
"Despite what?"
"Nothing," he spat. "I was bestowed my letter of marque, permitting me to raid enemy ships. I was a proud partner of the Crown, battling the Spanish grip on the West Indies. I followed the rules and shared my winnings. I was respectable. Legitimate."
"Then how did you fall so far as to become this?"
Hawk's large hand clamped around Nathaniel's throat, metal rings digging in painfully, cutting off his air.
He leaned low again. "Keep a civil tongue in your head, boy, or I will cut it out and feed it to you. Yes?"
Nathaniel nodded desperately, horror clawing at him, lungs already burning. He stamped his feet, wanting to kick and free himself somehow. Hawk's grip loosened, but didn't release. At least it was enough that Nathaniel could breathe again. Barely. Face hard, Hawk still leaned in close.
"That day, 7 years ago at the Court of Admiralty, when I presented my Spanish galleon loaded with treasure, your father announced that the Spanish captain had claimed cruel treatment in direct contravention to regulations. I knew it to be a lie since the man had stayed in my cabin utterly unarmed. I saw to it that no prisoner was ever armed on my ship."
"Perhaps the Spanish captain was the liar."
Nathaniel scraped the words out. Truthfully, it sounded exactly like something his father would do. Anything to further his own selfish desires.
"Of course, the captain could not say, as he had suddenly died the night before in the court's custody. But my letter of marque was invalidated, and in a heartbeat, I was declared a pirate. My ship and men would be seized as well."
He tightened his fingers on Nathaniel's neck.
"Your father and his cronies damned me and my crew to the gallows without a second thought. They took that galleon for themselves, sending little of the treasure to England's coffers from what I heard later. Your father is a greedy liar. You're probably just like him."
Nathaniel struggled for air, his hand coming up to grip Hawk's wrist, skittering, fear-clawing.
"Surely he won't kill me yet."
Blessedly, Hawk loosened his fingers. The rail dug into Nathaniel's back, and he cursed his father.
Damn him and his insatiable greed!
Nathaniel had heard stories of the New World's rampant corruption, and a Spanish treasure ship would certainly have been a tempting prize. Once again, he loomed large over Nathaniel's life, even in his absence. Nathaniel gazed up at Hawk's grim expression and the bitter twist of his full lips. Walter could wait. He must deal with the villain who currently clutched him in his talons, the scent of sweat and seawater filling Nathaniel's nose. Hawk continued,
"Your father and his conspirators underestimated my men, Mr. Snell and many of this crew. They overpowered the force sent to arrest them and rescued me from my cell. We reclaimed the Manor, but that was a name for a lawful ship. Since we'd been branded pirates, I thought a change was in order. She's the damned Manor now."
He tightened his hold on Nathaniel's throat.
"And I give no assurances on the well-being of prisoners."
With that, he pushed Nathaniel back below decks and toward his cabin, where a jittery crew member stood with a metal tool in hand.
"Lock's fixed, Captain."
He handed over the iron key. Nathaniel found himself sprawled on his face as Hawks shoved him inside, narrowly missing the edge of the desk. He pushed up to sitting, hating how he cowered, yet tempted to crawl under the desk as Hawk towered over him. The thought of being choked again was unbearable. The pirate sneered, then turned and stripped off his long coat, hanging it on a hook. His dark, open-necked shirt billowed slightly at the sleeves. As well as his sword and pistol, Nathaniel glimpsed the handles of two daggers tucked into Hawk's belt. One of them Nathaniel's own. His head spun with the rush of shame. What a failure he was. He hadn't even managed to scratch the fiend with his blade before it was snatched away as if from a naughty child. What would Mr. Chisholm think? That I'm a failure in everything, not only my studies. He blinked as the door shut, the key scraped in the lock, and Hawk was gone without another word. Thank the Lord for small mercies. The less he had to suffer the brute's presence, the better. Still on the floor, Nathaniel surveyed his cell. Sunlight warmed the air through the square window panes across the stern. On the port side, bookcases were built into the hull, thick books and rolled nautical charts tucked away neatly. He didn't bother going closer to see any of the titles. To starboard, there were built-in drawers and a large chest on the floor from which Hawk had plucked the blanket. Nathaniel could hardly bear to touch it and kicked it into the corner. He sat there and pulled his knees to his chest, thoughts tumbling through his mind willy-nilly. Could he have done more with the dagger? Mr. Chisholm's face filled his mind, and a pang of longing chimed through Nathaniel. His tutor had always seemed so capable, so strong and intelligent. Nathaniel closed his eyes and conjured Mr. Chisholm's square jaw, his green eyes, and blonde hair pulled back in a queue, the width of his shoulders and the way his coat had hugged his broad chest. Mr. Chisholm winked. "It's a dangerous world over in the colonies, on land and at sea." Nathaniel gingerly examined the gleaming metal in his hand, turning the smooth wood handle between his fingers. "You're giving me this?" His heart thumped almost painfully. "I know most tutors would bestow a book or some such thing, but I fear it would be rather wasted on you. Don't you agree?" He did indeed. Nathaniel longed to throw his arms around him and press his lips to the strip of bare skin above Mr. Chisholm's cravat. Since he was a boy, he'd dreamt of it, knowing his tutor was a good, decent man, not a sinner like Nathaniel, admiring him for it whilst despairing of it. After he shook Mr. Chisholm's hand like a gentleman, he watched him, heart in throat, as Mr. Chisholm rode to the end of the drive, around the bend, and was gone forever. Fighting a rush of tears, Nathaniel opened his eyes. He was still sitting on the floor of the Pirate King's cabin.